goodness, what a year. To our April board meeting, I want to start by saying, before I turn it over to Commissioner Stewart, I want to start by saying that this meeting is being recorded, and we'll go into more detail with regard to why we are doing that, as Ben explains, the executive orders that have come from the governor's office. But this meeting is being recorded. So for purposes of making sure everyone knows who's speaking, I am asking for a person to say who they are before they start speaking. I'm also asking that in the event you are not speaking, because we have a lot of people on the phone, I'm asking you to keep your phone on mute while you are not speaking so that we can cut down on the background noise. Please do not put it on hold, because on some phone systems, if you place it on hold, we will hear elevator music. So please, if you have to walk away from the phone or do something, please put your phone on mute. So with that being said, I will turn it over to the Chairperson Stewart to convene the meeting.
Okay, Jeff Stewart here. Thank you very much. I'll start, I guess the first item is a roll call.
Commissioners? Yes. Commissioner LaShane?
Yes.
Commissioner Stewart?
Yes, here.
Commissioner Settlemyer?
Present.
We have a quorum, Commissioner Stewart.
Thank you very much. Okay, the next item on the agenda is consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of March 10th, 2020. Do I have a motion to accept?
So moved.
Second.
This is Commissioner Settlemyer, so moved.
And Patty
LaShane, second. Thank you. It's been moved and properly seconded. Are there any correction discussions on that?
No? I just,
okay, hearing.
Because that was 2 days before the apocalypse happened.
Okay. Very great. All right, and then hearing done, then entertain the motion. All those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
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 Hello.
Oh. Sorry, did someone just join?
Yes, Karen Cato.
Oh, okay, Karen, how you doing?
Good.
Okay, so we're approving the minutes. So we said there are all the ayes. I said yes. Any noes? No abstention? Okay, it passed then. Well, thank you very much. Report to chairperson, have nothing to report. So thank you everybody for joining, and those who are joining, our residents are joining, thanks for joining. So I'm done with that. So next item is report of the executive director.
Sure. Good evening, everyone. It's been quite a month and a half. As I look back at my calendar, we began our emergency preparedness discussions at the Housing Authority during the first week in March. I'm looking back at my calendar, and I see a note on March 10th where we pulled together the executive staff and had our first emergency preparedness meeting, and I can tell you that the staff has done at all levels. The staff has done a wonderful job of, one, preparing ourselves for this pandemic in terms of, you know, just kind of brainstorming about the things that we needed to think about, because it became apparent very early on that we would need to work remotely. It became apparent very early on that we would need to prepare our maintenance staff to be able to operate in these conditions. It became apparent very early on that we would need to order certain supplies, whether it be cleaning supplies, whether it be laptops, just across the board. And so I want to start by thanking, you know, the staff for everything that they have done to, one, prepare ourselves for this historic moment, these historic days, and also to just your ongoing efforts. It has literally taken everybody to make this happen, and everybody's pitching in. So I know that I've been sending the board updates at least on a weekly basis in terms of what's been going on and what we've been doing. So I'll just kind of highlight some of that again. We've been working remotely. We are coming into the office. People are coming into the main office on a on an as-needed basis to do things like check the Dropbox, check the mail, pick up the rent receipts. It got down to a point where, you know, not all of our laptops that we needed were in. So the IT department, headed by Jeff Steele, who's on the phone this evening, literally it worked with the various departments. And in some instances, people literally just picked up their desktop unit and were able to walk out of the building with that and operate remotely. So it's really been interesting. We've been in close contact with the city of Hartford. Not a day goes by where I don't have some level of communication with them. They've alerted us to issues that we need to be aware of. We continue to do what we call the focus cleaning and the deep cleaning. Our maintenance staff is only working on emergency situations and not the routine calls. And I'll have Maria talk to you a bit about that as she presents her report. But it's been interesting. The executive staff has an 11 a.m. call every day where we basically just chat. Sometimes the call is 10 minutes. Sometimes the call is a half an hour. We have received constant briefings from HUD in terms of how HUD is addressing this pandemic. I have placed a folder, a subfolder in the April board package folder on ShareFile with all of the big material that HUD has sent us, and in particular a description of the funding that's going to be coming our way, and also a description of the regulatory relief that's going to be coming our way, as well as two sets of frequently asked questions. So it's very, you know, I'm not trying to overwhelm you all with information. I'm trying to give you information in a very concise manner. I've also loaded on the website, on the share file, our operating plan that was developed by staff that tells you how we're operating during this pandemic, and that's what I have to say. I also want to thank the residents for their patience, because I know that their lives have been interrupted. I know that we've had to close our community rooms. I know that we've essentially had them shelter in their units, and, you know, residents are cooperating. They're pitching in. They're doing what they can do. And, I just want to say that we're doing what we can do to address your needs, and I want to thank you all for your patience during this. The 8500 number continues to operate, 860-723-8500. So if there are issues in the unit, you should continue to call that number. Again, I want to reiterate that we're addressing the emergency issues and not the routine matters. So those are my comments at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jeff Stewart here. Okay, thank you very much, Sanderson. The next item is the public comment period. And again, if anybody from the public wants to comment, could you please identify yourself so we can record that, since we're doing this, away, we can't see it, so at least we can have it in the record. So I'll ask, are there any public comments right now? Okay, I'll ask one more time. Any public comments? Okay, last and final call. Any public comments? Okay, Ben, that was fair enough to make sure I asked. All right. Okay, then that's the next item is staff updates, and so I guess our executive director, you're going to coordinate that, how that's going to go?
Yes. Because we've been dealing with other things. I have had the board. I told the staff that we were not going to focus on the formal board reports for this month. We will get back on track next month, and there will be formal board package. You will have a formal report in your board packages. But for this month, what I've asked the staff to do is to focus on reporting and the relevant points, the relevant issues on this pandemic from their particular area. So I gave them, gave each of them some talking points that I'd like for them to address. So I'm going to start with Ben. And Ben, I'm going to ask you to focus on the legal issues and the procurement issues. Thank you.
Sure. Hey, everybody. It's Ben Baer. I'm glad to hear all of you. Sounds like you're all doing well. So the first thing we're going to talk about a little bit is the review of the governor's executive orders that impact our operation. The Housing Authority is generally exempted from most of the orders as a governmental organization, particularly the ones that have to do with essential businesses and who can be open and who can't. That said, we're complying with the spirit of the orders where it's practicable. So, for example, nobody's traveling for work. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about the reduced scope of maintenance operations. The folks that can work at home are our office areas, our warehouse, our community rooms, and other public areas are generally closed to the public, and some other items like that. There's a Housing Authority operational plan that we put together and had our outside employment council take a look at to see if anybody else was doing anything different that we should know about. And I believe that's been uploaded to ShareFile for the commissioners. It's also been distributed to the entire Housing Authority by email, so it has been sent out to everybody that details a little bit more of that. With respect to the other big thing that impacts us through the governor's executive orders are on evictions. Evictions for non-payment are completely stayed right now on the federal level by the CARES Act, and that moratorium goes until July 25th right now, which is a Saturday. And then the governor's moratorium on evictions for non-payment goes until early July. So between those two, that's non-payment. Both of them, the CARES Act and the governor's order, say you can't charge late fees and all that kind of stuff, too. So we're not doing that, obviously. The only thing that is accepted from both the CARES Act and the governor's executive orders are evictions that would take place for serious nuisance, and that would be something that rises to a statutorily described level of nuisance. That's not like your neighbor being too loud every once in a while that lives above you. That's something like your neighbor that lives above you jumping up and down on the floor from 10 to midnight every single night when they know you're trying to sleep or something like that. So there are a couple of those that are going that were going from before, but I don't think there's anything new. We continue to meet each week and talk about, or every other week, to talk about summary process. And we are continuing to send notices, like pre-termination notices, to cure for a lot of lease violations. For example, like if you're smoking or something like that, then in your unit, then you might still get a pre-termination notice, which gives you 30 days or a certain number of days, depending on the violation, to cure. But then we wouldn't be sending out a notice to quit after that. So we're still doing lease enforcement. We're still, letting people know that the governor's order and the CARES Act did not give you a payment holiday, even though that's what some folks have read. And we're still doing enforcement, but, obviously we're not doing anything on the summary process end until the pandemic is over. We continue to monitor those and see if they'll get extended or not. And that kind of covers the governor's pieces. As far as a review of procurement operations, we're very active right now on the procurement side. You've got several things on the agenda tonight from procurement. We're also taking the opportunity to reorganize some of the files into what we think is a better system, and to get out several solicitations as well. You're going to see solicitations over the next couple of months for architects and engineers, environmental services, brokerage services. We're looking at smaller stuff like our internet service provider, and also our double checking on our cell phone stuff to make sure that we're getting the best pricing there that we can get. So we're taking opportunity to do all that stuff. And then we have also, just today, we formally awarded and came to an agreement on contract terms with a new Section 3 consultant who's going to help us get through the VCA that we have outstanding. And then also during this, I think it was probably about that same day that Commissioner LeShane was mentioning, we had our last live interview for a contracting officer. Since then, we've had a couple phone interviews, and then we had one WebEx interview. We selected someone. I made her an offer today, and she accepted. Unfortunately, we couldn't give her a start date because of the COVID crisis, but she's very excited to get going. She has prior HUD experience on the real estate side, and then she also has some contract management experience as well. One of our current property managers worked with her in the past and gave her a glowing recommendation. And I talked to at least one of her other references today who did the same. So very excited about that. So that's kind of the procurement side. On the HUD side, Annette and I and Joshua and others have been participating in some of the nationwide calls that HUD has had where they talk about what they're going to do. They have finally released a public information notice that gives regulatory relief in several different areas. The main gist of the regulatory relief is that it doesn't excuse the performance of any obligations, really. It's more of a giving you time where necessary. So things like a good example, which is not one that applies to us, but a good example is that, as some of you guys remember, the five-year planning process is very in-depth, a lot of public meetings, a lot of public input, a lot of different times you have to meet and that kind of thing. They're pushing off those times. They're pushing off the time for the submission of audited or of financials, which Joshua had done before anyway. They're pushing off the time for annual recertification completion and that kind of thing. And so most of the stuff that's in there is stuff that we probably won't be taking advantage of because we don't need to, but the availability is there. The other thing that they're doing with their regulatory relief is they're requiring housing authorities to track the day they start and stop using certain provisions and to provide justifications for the future. So if we do decide to use one or more of the options, we'll definitely be keeping track. And that's kind of where we are. We have another call on Friday with HUD, and Joshua will talk about some of the funding stuff that's coming up too. So.
Thank you, Ben. You know, thank you, Ben. You know, I just wanted to, it's Annette again. I just wanted to add one of the things that we have decided to take advantage of was something that Katrina and I discussed via email today, and that is under this public information document that allows for regulatory relief, you can choose to go with your CMAP score from the fiscal year ending 2018. Just to remind you all, we presented a resolution at the February board meeting for our CMAP submission for the fiscal year ending 2019. And so we went through the process. Katrina and I did the submission, but everything just blew up. Everything was put on hold, and we never received back an official score from HUD with regard to the 2019 CMAP process. So, we were actually contacted today by HUD, as well as other housing authorities, asking us whether or not we wanted to take advantage of the relief that's offered under this new regulatory relief document, and whether or not we wanted to go with our 2018 score. And so we decided to do that. And the good news for us is that our 2018 score was a 93 out of 100. And so we will maintain the status of a high performer for our Section 8 program. So then that's one thing that we decided to do today.
Great. Fantastic. Okay.
Yep. So with that being said, I'm going to ask Joshua to provide us with an overview of what's been happening in finance and to focus in particular on things like the funding, rent collection, as well as the support departments, HR and IT. And we also have Jeff Seeley on the phone to pipe in. Jeff, if you think you have anything to add under IT as well. Thank you.
Sure. Good evening, commissioners. In terms of HUD funding, our regular funding for Housing Choice Vouchers has continued to flow to us. The new grant for capital funds has been opened up and locked, but it's not yet available to draw down from. We have to work with the HUD field office to turn in some paperwork and get that finalized. Last year, we got the money about this time, and then we actually had access to the money around August. So hopefully we can do a little bit quicker this year, but it's not an immediate process. So that money's been funded. LIPH has been funded through April. May hasn't shown up yet to draw down, and it's not time to draw down yet, but May hasn't shown up yet, so we're not quite sure what that number is going to look like. But there was additional funding in the COVID-19 relief bill that Congress passed. It included $850 million for HCV administrative fees and an additional $685,000 for LIPH, or I'm sorry, $685 million for LIPH operating subsidy. The Section 8 money, the HCV money, would be equal to about 42% of a full year's funding. So, but HUD hasn't really said how that's going to be distributed. The language that's in the bill says it's for expenses shall be new eligible activities to be defined by HUD and shall be activities to support or maintain the health and safety of assisted individuals and families and costs related to retention and support of current participating landlords. I don't know that HUD has clarified what that's going to look like yet. I haven't seen anything from them. But in contrast, the LIPH additional funding says that it's going to be distributed to everybody based on the usual operating subsidy formulas. And the amount of money that the COVID relief bill funded was about 14 to 15% of what the normal funding for a year is. So if that ends up being just additional money that comes to us in the same proportion our usual money comes to us, it'd be about $750,000, which would be significant. I don't know that that's going to end up being what it is, but that's a pretty good case scenario. If that happens, that would be great. So we'll see what happens when the COVID-19 relief bill actually gets interpreted by HUD and how that money filters down to us. But it's possible that public housing could see some significant help on the funding side, which would be great. In terms of rent collection, in March, when this all first started, March was only partially impacted because really this stuff started happening towards the end of March in terms of really impacting the community in terms of job loss and things like that. But March is generally a pretty good month for us because of tax returns. And so we did end up collecting 98.7% of rent. So we collected about $365,000. Which was about $14,000 more than we collected last year. April so far has been pretty strong. I was actually very, very worried with the number of announcements from state and federal government about rent, whether or not our residents would be confused about whether or not they had to pay rent. A letter did go out to all of them, so response has been pretty good. Through the first 10 days of April, we collected about $220,000. Compared to April of last year, in the first 10 days, we collected $232,000. So we're about $12,000 short of where we are last year, but that's we haven't realized my worst fears of nobody paying their rent. So it's been pretty good. And the 10th this year was a Friday, and it was Good Friday before, the Easter holiday weekend, so that may have impacted some rent collection as well. People probably knew that they weren't going to get late fees or anything else like that over the holiday weekend. So so that may have impacted our rent collection as well. But being about $12,000 behind where we were last year is still pretty good. And $220,000 is about two-thirds of our rent collection for the month. So rent collection is shaping up better than I expected, so that's been good. Human resources. We have open enrollment right now for our employees, for their benefits, for healthcare and other benefits. That finishes up on May 1st. That's when everybody's supposed to have their paperwork in to HR and everybody's signed up for the new benefits year. In the past few years, we did see very small increases. We've been very lucky the last few years to have increases in the 2 to 3% range. This year was a little bit different. We did have a lot of heavy usage. We do have a population that is, we have an older population of workers, which also includes some retirees. And so our usage this year was heavier than in years past, and so we got hit with a higher increase this year. Our quote back was at a 9% increase. That's higher than the last few years, but given that the renewal date is in May, 9%, we're already halfway through the year. I budget a 5% increase every year, so actually a 9% increase for the benefits year ends up being about a 5% increase for a calendar year. For our budget year, and so the 9% increase actually falls right into where we budgeted for the year 2020. So while it's heavier than what we normally see, it does fall in line with budget. Payroll, we've been working with ADP to get everybody paid while everybody's off. We've been mailing check stubs. Normally we would distribute manually, but we've been mailing check stubs out to everybody. We have a few people that still get live checks. They've been getting mailings. And we're in the middle of transitioning away from ADP because we did go out to bid on a new contract on the payroll system, and we've been working the last couple months with a company called NeoGov to replace ADP. That should be another month or two that we'll be working on that before we really go live with them. We want to make sure everybody gets paid right before we go live with a new company. And then on the IT side, I'll just say that Jeff and Deborah have been really doing great work. We were very lucky that we had just replaced all of our desktops with all-in-ones that had Wi-Fi, and so most everybody that didn't have a laptop was able to still take their all-in-one home, just carry it right out the door and take it home and set it up. I know it's been a challenge for Jeff and Deborah working remotely and solving everybody's problems remotely, but they've been working hard and doing a great job and really exceeding expectations. So I'll let Jeff say anything else he wants to say about what's going on with IT.
Thank you, Joshua. This is Jeff Seeley. I'd just like to say that we were very fortunate as an organization, as both Annette said and Joshua, that the timing worked out, that we had just put in and finished up the all-in-ones desktops for people, which made it possible for them to fairly easily take those home. The other things are just because of the way that we're set up, half of our people connected from outside on a daily basis, so it was easy for us to roll it over to everybody else, which allows them to get to our major software. We've also been rolling out a VPN or virtual private network, and we were able to leverage that and allow people to get to their files. And recently we had gone to a cloud-based file system, which we're also leveraging, including an e-signing electronic signature capability. The other things that have kind of helped, but not as much as I would have hoped, is we had moved to a mobile work order software and provided cell phones to all the maintenance staff, but that's being able to be leveraged for connectivity regarding email, text, and phone calls for the maintenance staff. We've also worked on some issues that we have no control over, individual internet connection speeds, which most people today probably have noticed that at certain times of the day, your favorite websites, whether they actually be work-related or not, are hard to get to or slow. And so that's kind of our biggest issue which I'd also like to just give a big applause to all of our department heads and Hatch staff, that everybody has been extremely patient and understanding, and it really helps out the IT department because we can only deal with so many people at one time working through the issues. So it's a big thank you to everybody that we work with. It just kind of proves what a great group we have. And some of the department heads are working and thinking outside the box, so we're utilizing WebEx. I think Ben brought that up, that they're doing interviews via the video conference software. We're using other things such as Slack and LogMeIn for connectivity issues and working with people so that we can connect to their computers and try to deal with the issues as they come up. And that's about all I have. I've rambled on too long, so I'm all done.
Jeffrey, thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you, Joshua. Thank you, Jeffrey. I don't know if Yvette Mosley, our HR administrator, is on. Yvette, are you on? Okay. Well, Joshua has already covered the HR department, and Yvette's doing a wonderful job as well in terms of keeping things coordinated from an HR perspective. I wanted to give her the opportunity to speak if she was on. Any questions, commissioners, at this point before we move on? Okay. Again, I should say it's Annette speaking. So I'm going to have Maria Centrone to give us some highlights from operations, and that would include both the low-income public housing occupancy department as well as our field operations department, maintenance department, as well as any issues with our new entity, New Day, which manages Melton Court. Thank you, Maria.
Good evening, everybody. This is Maria. I have to say that Ms. Anderson has called meetings before the whole coronavirus started, and we were able to kind of prepare for what was coming at the point that by, we'll say, March 13, 12, we were able to cancel certain appointments for visitors to come to our office to limit the traffic to start preventing spreading. So we started like really early in March. We also been participating on calls with the HUD field office and other housing authorities, you know, within Connecticut, sharing, this is a learning experience for everybody, sharing what they've been doing and what we were doing. And after hearing those calls, we were a little bit ahead of what they were trying to do when they were having these calls on a weekly basis. So first, we sent notifications to all of our tenants, like Joshua mentioned, to, you know, let them know the rent still due, how to pay it. We close the office. We put a Dropbox. We are handling things remotely by phone. And that notification also included information on how to report changes on their income so their rent is adjusted properly. A lot of people are being impacted by this, and the rent, their income has to be reviewed, and the rent has to be adjusted to what it should be. So on an average, six months past, we handle about 16 to 20 interns a month. Right now, in the last 45 days, the low-income public housing occupancy department has completed 50 interns. So that means it double up of what we usually handle on interns, and we'll still have like 20 that we are processing. So, lot of people, yes.
Maria, hi, Maria. Tonette, if I could just interject, just so we're all on the same page. An interim, when you refer to an interim, you're referring to an interim recertification because of a change in income, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. So for interims, yes, we have seen double in 45 days. So we're expecting to have more. Right now we're still processing about 20, and it's only the 14th of April. So we are expecting these changes because agencies within Hartford most our tenant, where our tenants work, are still debating if they're going to remain closed or open, and they are reporting as they go in these for these changes on income. For annual recertification, we put on hold for the last 2 weeks in March. To see how this was going to play out. We prepare with the assistance of the IT department to complete these annual recertifications because they're still a requirement from HUD remotely. So we send notices out, and we are receiving a great response, I will say, from residents. We are just asking them to call us, and let's see how can we, you know, complete the recertification without coming to the office and seeing you in person. And it's been a great response for that. Right now, we are handling about 70 annual recertifications. Those letters were sent out beginning of April, and at least 25 people has responded to that letter. So it's only a week away. So I'm hopeful that we can continue processing annual research. It will be on a slower pace, but as long as they're completed, I think we should be good. For the maintenance and the sites, at the same, when we limited the traffic to the main office, we also started looking into our sites. And we started communicating with tenants that it would be best if we closed down common areas like community rooms, game rooms, some rooms to prevent, you know, people gathering and prevent spreading. And the response from the tenants were really good, understanding. We closed those locations the week before, the last week of March. They were closed for the residents. It's completely closed. The only common areas open are the lobby and laundry rooms. And they're very, very understanding of what is going on with that. Maintenance staff are been working on reduced alternate days. We are trying to having them with the less exposure possible. They're only attending emergency work orders, essential work, disinfecting areas, and they're doing this on alternate schedule. They're going to the sites every other day. They're even going weekends to take care of the trash and cleaning the areas that need disinfecting because of the people, like doors, entrances, and all that. They're taking care of emergency work orders only. Vacancy crews, we still have them working also on larger units, 4 bedrooms, 3 bedrooms. We limited to only 2 employees at the same unit so they can work on different rooms and practicing social distance. The agency in cooperation with Ben and Annette and everybody worked on a hack business plan, which details every step that we are trying to implement during this time. Property managers are also working from remotely. They're driving by the site, stopping by the site, checking on everything. They're working from home, checking on the cameras when we have cameras, where we have cameras at the sites, and they are able to check if something is going on, and they'll be able to handle any issues. The resident service coordinator, I think Karen Cato is in the call, they were able to process the last meal distribution, the monthly, before we completely stopped gathering with a lot of people. But they continue working, checking on the tenants, and Karen has been checking on any monitoring, any changes on the current programs that they receive. A lot of the activities they do, they're being on hold, canceled, and checking for any other resource or program that is available to the tenants. And she's been sharing that information with us. Karen, if you have anything to say about that.
No, I'm good.
Okay. We also been receiving information from the city and other private entities for meal distribution. So these meal distributions were not part of the regular program that is handled with the resident service coordinator or with the tenants directly. We were able to provide 127 boxes of fresh produce to Mary Shepherd, and we were able to handle it in a way that we limited exposure. The police cadets worked with the resident leaders, and they were able to deliver every tenant with a box, and they delivered to the front of the door. And I think that was really good. We had another one. So far it's been on hold, but we'll continue evaluating when opportunities like that come, since we are uncertain when our resident will continue receiving their supplies.
Hi, this is Patty LaShane. Could I ask a question?
Yes.
It's very interesting how adaptable that you've become and how you've worked with the tenants to make it kind of, and I don't think there's a win-win, but a mutually workable situation. Do you see any of the things that you've learned and the things that you've adjusted being something that you would continue long-term? Or is it really that everyone's kind of like dealing with it because there's no other choice, but in reality it's working as best it can, but this wouldn't be the way you'd want to go forward? I don't know if that's a fair question, but just curious on your opinion.
Go ahead, Maria, then I'll chime in. Go ahead, Maria.
For the occupancy department, the recertification is something that we could definitely implement long-term, having remote recertification. Sometimes our tenants, they're working the same hours that we're open, and it is flexible for them be able to provide documentation or sign documents electronically. So it's something that we definitely can take a look for the future, at least for that part.
That's funny. That's what hit me when you said that. I'm like, man, I bet you they'd love the fact they don't have to take time off from work. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. You're welcome.
Yes, there are heights in that again. There are definitely some things that we have learned through this process, and things that I think some measures that I think are worth implementing going forward to make just make our overall efforts more efficient. And that's one of them. You know, the whole review and certification process is one of them.
Yeah.
So are there any other questions before we move on to Katrina? And let me just add, I do want to, Karen's on the phone, Karen Cato, one of our resident service coordinators. I just want to thank Karen for her efforts, because, you know, one of the things that we wanted to make sure that was that our residents that, you know, relied on these food distributions and meals could continue to receive the food that they receive on a monthly basis. And Karen has done a very good job of making that happen. And Karen, I thank you. I thank you for that. I also, you know, what was also important to me was, to us, I should say, was that we continue to, you know, to monitor our residents that don't have a family support system. So I know one of the things that John Williams and Maria and Karen and the property managers have been focused on is just reaching out to residents. You know, I said I want to make sure that people are called periodically to just kind of check in to see how things are going from their perspective. So that's happening as well. Okay. So Katrina?
Hi, this is Katrina. So like all the other departments, we've been extremely busy, and my staff has been doing an outstanding job completing all regular day-to-day activities, as well as the additional interim reexaminations to adjust participants' rents, because most of our population that we serve have been out of work. I did a comparison from 2019 to 2020 for the months of March, April, and May. Last year, there was about 125 done, and for 2020, it's about a 40% increase. There was 309 already done for March, April. in May. So that's, like I said, about a 40% increase. They also have to do move-ins. They have to do annual reexaminations. Our inspection department, we're not doing annual inspections, only re-inspections to the annuals that were already completed. We're also doing initial inspections and special inspections. I've done outreach to landlords to get them on direct deposit. So in the event that we could not go into the office, they would still get paid through the electronic system. I've also reached out to landlords because HUD is hosting a webinar presented by Nan McKay. This webinar is the second series, and it walks through like the strategy of the HCU program and focuses on education and outreach strategies so we can recruit new landlords, we can retain current landlords. So that's what the Section 8 department's been doing over the last couple months.
Katrina, thank you for that, hi, it's Annette again. Can you focus a bit more on the self-certification process for landlords for inspections?
Yeah, so inspections, if there was a failed item and we can't get into the unit, either the landlord is not going there or the tenant doesn't want anyone in the unit, they can take a picture of the deficiency and send it to us or send us confirmation that it was repaired by a contractor, and then we would actually pass the unit. We wouldn't put them in abatement due to us not being allowed back into the unit.
Then we would follow up at a certain point, right? At some point, they need to provide all
well, that's an alternative that HUD allows, so we can use the pictures as confirmation and other, like if there was an infestation, a copy of the report. I mean, understanding that if there is another issue down the line, we would just go back out and re-inspect the unit for those deficiencies.
Yes, thank you. Katrina, you're happy about hanging on to that score of 93, right? For CMAP?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, we would have been still a high performer. It was just like we were last year. It was just we weren't rated.
Right, we weren't rated. And we were not, hi, it's Annette again. We weren't rated, and from what I understand, there would have been some delay in our rating coming down, so we didn't really lose anything by sticking with our score from last year. We're still a high performer. So, any questions of Katrina? Thank you, Katrina. So next, we're going to have Elisa Hobbs to just give us a quick update in terms of what's happening in development.
Thank you. Good evening, Commissioners. It's Elisa. Westbrook development has been continuing without disruption in light of current affairs. It's instituted COVID-19 measures to continue to work, some of which have included elimination of site meetings, conversion all to either video or teleconference meetings. They've installed hand wash stations and sanitizers and have instituted cleaning measures in their job trailers and their portalettes, and they're instituting social distance between their workers so that no more than a couple of trade workers are in a building at one time. So they're continuing to work throughout this time, as I mentioned, and they're moving right along. Phase one, which consists of about 75 units, is 100% complete as far as demolition. The first building will be completed in July. The final building completed in October. They're going to be placing a marketing trailer on the site sometime in May so that they can start with their resident outreach services. They're going before P&Z, City of Hartford, for road approval for the name, which at this point is Cary Perry Way, which they'll be submitting to P&Z soon. The phase two, which consists of 60 units, they have completed 100% demolition. They're about 15% complete on the construction. The completion date for their first building is in December, with their final building in February of 2021. Phase three, which is 65 units, 100% completion on demolition. They were recently awarded tax credits and DOH funding for that phase. So they'll be looking to close on that type of financing in September and hopefully commence construction thereafter. Phase four, they're targeting 60 units. Demolition is about 20% complete on that one. And there's about 11 buildings remaining to be demolished on that site. They're continuing with some design work on that stage. They'll be submitting a tax credit application in the fall. And they'll be seeking zoning site approval for that as well. They're still working on what they plan on putting as on the commercial retail portion of that property. They've had various discussions with entities as to how to program that site. And so that project is moving right along with no disruption based on COVID. And as far as our repositioning portfolio, that is also progressing with no disruption. We submitted an application for a large development project that we're looking to reposition and convert, which consists of about 163 units. 145 of those were in a RAD blend application. They consist of 127 units at Mary Shepherd, 6 at Bellevue, and 12 at Sanford Street. And 109 of those units will be converted under the RAD program, with 36 of those units being converted under a Section 18 program. We were awarded our CHAP in February. We're currently working on our financing model. Our next steps would be to select a GC for that project and commence a low-income housing tax credit application. We're targeting a closing for December of this year. We'll also be submitting this week an application, a Section 18 application for 123, 125 Martin Street, which consists of 12 units. And we'll be commissioning a physical needs assessment for Capon Street, which is 6 units, which we need to do in advance of our submission of a RAD application for that. So all of those consist of 163 units that we're looking to reposition in 2020. And we also have outstanding our scattered sites application. We had submitted that, and we had a public hearing back in February, and submitted supporting documentation to the commissioner, and so we're still waiting to hear back on that. Any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Elisa. So it's Annette again, and that concludes our staff reports, our staff updates, and I hope they've been helpful for you all as commissioners. As I said earlier, we will have formal staff reports for the May 12th board meetings, so we will have formal written reports for the next board meeting, which will incorporate everything that's going on in the various departments. So, Commissioner Stewart, that's the end of the reports.
Okay, Jeff Stewart here. Okay, thank you very much. So the next item on the agenda is...
Commissioner Stewart?
I'm sorry, go ahead. Yep.
Sorry, this is Commissioner Sellemeyer. I just wanted to take a moment to thank Annette and staff for all of those updates. That was incredibly helpful to hear, and I just really appreciate you all taking the time out of your evening to walk us through all of those updates. So thank you very much for all the work you're doing, and thank you for those helpful updates. I learned a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Sellemeyer.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
That's really good. Thank you. Any other comments from the commissioners?
No, I would agree. I'd echo the same. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, then new business. We have 5 resolutions before us in the new business. And the first resolution is resolution number 20-2013 regarding amendment of award of contract or on-call architect and engineer services. I will ask for a motion to consider, and please, Commissioner, identify yourself, whichever one you're going to step up and do it, you move and second it. So, Any motion? Is there a motion to consider?
Yes. This is Commissioner Settlemyer. Motion to consider.
Okay. It's been moved. And is there a second?
Patty LaShane. Sorry. Second.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Staff, any discussion?
I'm going to ask Ben Baer, Attorney Baer, to present the provide an overview of all the resolutions. Ben?
Sure. This is Ben Baer. So with this one, you guys saw this one other time before, not too long ago. This was a contract when we bid it out. The idea was, or when we solicited it, it wasn't a bid, but the idea was that there would be three architects and that they would each have a set amount of money that they could, or that we could utilize with them each year. And so that was set at, the original amount was $182,193. That was what the cost estimate was. The idea was that each time the authority had need for an architectural firm, they would go to these three firms. They would say, hey, firm 123, I need your price on doing X. And the idea was that eventually they probably would all even out on getting work, with some of them bidding lower on things that they were more comfortable with and that kind of thing. So a really good idea to try to keep costs down for the authority and to promote competition between the firms. The way that it worked in practice was that two of the firms were always very high and one of the firms was always very low. And the very low firm also does very good work. So it was no, you're just lowballing to get the work. It was, your pricing structure is lower and you do good work. So we modified you guys modified the contract to make it $200,000 per contract, $200,000 per contract, and on the idea that we would still try to do the competition. It still didn't work, and so this particular resolution asks you to add, $50,000 to the typically lowest contractor's contract. That's Capital Studios. And then the contract for this ends, I think, in April. So the contract year ends in April. And so the idea is that we're, instead of continuing on with this structure, Elisa is working on an RFQ to go back out for architectural and engineering services that would still have a lot of on-call contractors, but would have one aggregate price. So we would still try to promote competition, but if it doesn't work out, then we wouldn't have this weird administrative friction continuing in the future. So it's kind of long-winded, but it feels like one of those things where we're actually spending a lot less on an annual basis than we thought we would on architects and engineers, but it just happens to be that this one firm has been the lowest one over the last year. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Any questions from the commissioners?
I don't know if I really, this is Commissioner LaShane. Ben, I don't know if I totally understood what you were saying. It's like, so different, the three contractors would maybe have like areas of expertise where they would come in lower to do a project, and that over time they didn't.
Yeah, I think the original idea here, and Elisa and I weren't here when this was originally started. We were here, or I was here when it was originally awarded, but the start had happened before. The idea was that you would have three firms, four firms maybe, and that over the life of the contract, things would kind of average out. So you'd have, and it just didn't. And I think that a large part, it's tough to say, but what we've looked at going back is, it seems like that a couple of the firms are more interested in really big jobs, and so they have traditionally have, apparently, it looks like, have bid higher on the smaller jobs. And so the authority has still gotten really, really good pricing on every job that it's done. It's just ended up with the one firm that has a better pricing structure has ended up with almost all of the work.
So the reason why we're, and maybe I misunderstood this, so this resolution would add money to a firm that priced too low?
Ben, do you, can I interject for a second and hopefully clarify?
That's Alicia.
So what's been traditionally happening is whenever there's a job that needs to be, that where we require architectural and engineering services, we have three firms on call. So that particular job is a request for quote or proposal submitted to each one of those three firms. They all qualify to do the work because they're all passed our request for qualifications in order to get onto our on-call list. When they submit their pricing to us, it's always the one firm that's the lowest and responsible bidder.
Right.
And so they're typically always the one that gets selected because they meet the qualifications and they're also the lowest responsible bidder.
Right.
So because they are all, so because they are always, they now have a lot of jobs, they reach their threshold a lot quicker than the other two who aren't always selected.
Okay.
And so because of that, because the contract was divided into three lots of 200 as opposed to one pot from which to draw from, that particular one vendor is approaching their threshold quicker than the other two,
so,
thus requiring this resolution.
So we're allowing that one contractor a separate exception to the rule that they all signed up for?
Well, that is sort of. So the way that all of our on-call contracts work, and it's not just this one, it's all of our consulting contracts, all of them, are that they're what you call an indefinite quantity contract. So there's no guarantee of any work.
Okay.
And so there's no, like, you know, I get a third, Alicia gets a third, and you get a third every year, and that's the way it works. That's not, it's not set up that way. So it's not that, so we are absolutely not taking work away from anybody that couldn't have had it, right? Because everybody had a fair chance to get in the lowest price.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
Yeah.
And so it's an indefinite quantity contract. This contractor just has traditionally been the lower bidder. He's a smaller operation. He does a lot of housing authority work. Both of the other two do too. But their price structures are just higher. And I don't know if that's because they are more set up to do larger jobs or if they more want to do larger jobs or how that works. But that's just the way that it's been. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so would it be fair to say that the prime intention of this is to allow for the authority to continue to accept the lowest bid on future projects and not to throw this particular company out because they've exceeded their...
Yes, absolutely, Commissioner Hyde. Hyde,
so
Annette, yes.
Other contract, what is the, and this is kind of the legal side, Ben. So for the other two contractors, they're good with this?
Yeah, they've submitted pricing and, you know, they just...
But are they aware that we're doing this?
I don't know that we actually told the other two contractors specifically, but everything is public, so, and both of them are pretty big in the housing authority world. And I don't know that we're even sitting on, oh, go ahead, Alicia.
Oh, I was just about to say, so the Hatch is actually exceeding HUD regulations by having more than one on-call contractor. So per HUD regulations, we only really need to have the one
But in order to spur competition, that was expanded to three.
Right, and I guess I'm only concerned not on, you know, I'm not questioning the judgment, but what concerns me is that we're changing the rules that applied to three people equally, and two of them may not know that we're changing. And I just, you know, that's kind of where it strikes me, is that if they all knew this was happening and everybody did it, it's like, okay, well, that makes sense, we do this, but on the other hand, we set up a structure that, yeah, there was unintended consequences, and now, you know, it may not be best, but we do have contracts with them that, you know, is there a transparency issue maybe that we should think
Hi, it's Annette. Hi, Commissioner Sinnett. The other thing, I mean, I think that's a very valid point. The other thing to consider here is that this is for the short term, because we are in the process of going back out this month, right, Alisa?
Yes.
Oh.
So.
Yeah.
So we are. So this is a very temporary move right now. So the plan would be to come back to the board. Probably, are we going to be ready for the May board meeting for the A&E Award, Architecture and Engineering Award, Alisa?
Well, it depends on how long we put it out there for.
But June probably at the latest, right?
Oh, for sure, yes.
Okay, because this current contract for all of them expires when?
Well, the contract year ends at the end of, I think it's at the end of this month. The actual contract still has at least another year plus two extensions, but we have the right to terminate on 30 days notice. We have not put the notice out. Well before we put the RFQ out, we will talk to all three contractors, and we've already, Alisa and I and Corey have already discussed this about putting together a communication for each one or having a conference call and just saying to all three of them, look, the original intention was this, it's not working. All the other two contractors are abundantly aware that it's not working, right, because they're just not winning. They know. They know. That the contract just doesn't work the way that it was set up on that competitive piece.
Yeah, and I'm just, and I guess I'm just thinking, you know, given the economics of it, that, you know, again, not as, you know, questioning the judgment, and this clearly was set up prior to you, and hopefully we all understand it's maybe not structured properly, but other than that, I just really do have a concern with not telling the other two parties that had previously been treated as equals that, oh, we're going to do something special for this one company because it benefits us. I mean, I don't know what kind of contract rights, because I'm not a lawyer. It just kind of...
Well, I would almost look at it as unless there's some exceptional reason for selecting a bid that's not the lowest responsible bidder, we need to go with the lowest responsible bidder, so, and they're advised for each.
But there's a cap that is part of the contract on it, so, and we're alleviating that cap.
So we created that cap, but per HUD, you know, we have to go with the lowest responsible bidder unless there's some exceptional reason why we can't or shouldn't.
And I guess my question would be, is the exceptional reason is that by contract, they've exceeded their cap, which I think is a terrible thing. I'm not suggesting that, but I'm just trying to figure out how the other two...
Well, I do hear what you're saying, Commissioner LeShane, and I think it's a valid point. And I think if it were the case that there was some kind of a guarantee on work for each contractor per year or something like that, which we didn't do. We set it up as a indefinite quantity with a not to exceed. So meaning, you know, yeah, then, I mean, I understand what you're saying about,
yeah.
The other piece of it
is, for a lawsuit that maybe, and that's kind of what I'm thinking, to be honest, is that, you know, if I'm one of the other companies going like, wait a minute, we were all treated equal, and yeah, maybe I don't get the bid because I'm over the lowest price, but now these guys automatically get it because they've been allowed to open up the, and maybe part of their business strategy is, oh good, now that they've reached their threshold, I'll get some of the work. You know what I mean? It's like,
So this is Commissioner Settlemyer. I'd like to jump in. Commissioner Blashane, I appreciate the point that you're making. I want to acknowledge, especially since this is being recorded, I am not a Connecticut lawyer, nor am I a lawyer for the Housing Authority, but I am a lawyer in private in past life, and a contract lawyer. That I, you know, if the contract was, if we have contracts with each of these companies individually and the contracts themselves allow for amendment, then I don't think, I just think that's unlikely that there's a viable claim there. We have the right to amend this contract with this vendor. Though I do appreciate the spirit of the point you're making, Commissioner Lachey, but I just want to express that for what it's worth, I don't see the potential for a viable lawsuit there.
Okay, and that's kind of what I was fishing for, because I, too, am not, well, you're a lawyer. I'm not even a fake lawyer or a non-fake lawyer. I didn't mean that, Laura, sorry, but I mean, I don't even have a lawyer.
I know you meant, yes.
It's just like, that just is odd. If I was the other companies, I'd be ripped that they didn't at least consult me and at least, you know, raise the issue before someone approved it. But, you know, if you kind of feel just in your non-legal expertise that, you know, there is the ability to amend the contract, there's no restrictions on it, then, you know, it does make it better for the authority to get the lowest possible price without restrictions. You know, and maybe I would just say that, you know, if the situation were to occur again, that we may want to just try to check out with people who have potential liability, so that we don't have potential liability.
Sure. And, you know, and that's a big part of, you know, the way that this contract was set up and the way that it ended up playing out is a big reason. I mean, you know, that's all you can do in procurement is try to make your next one better, right, and make it match the needs of the authority more, and they tried to do something here to do that, and it just didn't work. So,
yeah. Well, I'm good. I just felt I had to ask that question because it just seemed I didn't understand what was going on. So I appreciate the time you guys allowed me to ask questions.
It's a gesture. No, ask those questions. Always ask the questions. Always good to do that because I feel comfortable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Are there any other comments or concerns or anything else from anybody? No? Okay. Then having asked that, it's been properly moved and second. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Any noes? Any abstentions? Okay, we're good. Okay, the next resolution, second one, is resolution number 2020-14 regarding allowance for payment of invoices outside of current contract year, contract 18-13-17. Is there a motion to consider?
So moved.
Okay, this is Commissioner Settlemyer seconding.
Okay, so Commissioner Blashane moved and Commissioner Settlemyer seconded. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, staff?
Sure. So this is Ben. This should be much more straightforward. 18-13-17 is our snow plowing and landscaping contract. And we get a lot of invoices for that every year. The way that the authority's accounting and contract spend tracking systems work is that we go on a contract year basis to make sure that, you know, we're not spending any more than we're supposed to, and so that we're kind of matching the budgets that Joshua sets. And so in this case, John Williams realized that he had just completely inadvertently missed a couple of invoices. The contractor had sent them on time. They were sent timely. John verified that the work was actually completed. And by the time that the vendor, which was relatively quick, actually, by the time that the vendor figured out that they had been missed, he called John, and he was able to prove that he had sent the invoices timely and everything else. And since that contract year is closed, the best and most straightforward and transparent way to pay those invoices is to essentially ask the board to amend the contract to allow the payment of these invoices out of the current year. It won't affect the current year contract spend or anything else, and so that's just what we've got.
Okay, any questions, commissioners? Okay, all right, then hearing no, and it's been properly moved to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any noes? Any abstentions? Okay, great. Thank you very much. The next one is resolution number 20-2015 regarding award for refuse, recycle, bulky waste, and removal and related services. I'm sorry. Yeah, was that the one? Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yep, sorry. Yeah. All right. So is there a motion to consider?
Commissioner Settlemyer is making the motion.
Thank you. And is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Commissioner Lachine seconded.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, staff?
Yep, so this is That's Ben. As you can, this is one of our standard, I mean, it's one of our larger contracts, but it's also one of our standard contracts for garbage service at our developments. We went through the process. We had two bidders, and we selected All Waste as the lowest responsible bidder. The bid tabulation is attached, and that's where we are on that one. This will be for 3 years, starting on or about May 1st, and then it'll have 2 one-year extensions at our option.
Okay, any questions from commissioners? Okay, hearing no questions, then it's been properly moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Okay, any noes? Any abstentions? Okay, very good. Thank you very much. The fourth resolution is resolution number 20-2016 regarding amendment of award of contract for emergency response and restoration. Do I hear a motion to consider?
Commissioner Lachine, a motion to consider.
Thank you very much. It's been moved. Is there a second?
Commissioner Settlemyer is seconding.
Okay, thank you for the second. Okay, staff, let's up to you.
Sure. So, okay. Ben, again, we have a contract that we put out in 2017 for emergency services. The main idea behind the contract at the time was to help out with things that were mostly insurance related. So, like if we had a fire or whatever. That we would be able to have somebody that we already had established pricing with, that we knew that we had vetted to do the work. So a lot of the work under this contract is actually paid for by insurance proceeds, which is why the $50,000 limit was originally set. As you may guess, we wanted to be proactive on this, given the COVID crisis, and so we wanted to be proactive, and so we're asking for the contract to be modified and moved up to $200,000, and that would just be for the now current contract year. And that just allows us to be able to use the contract pricing that we have to do, as the executive director was talking about, to do some of those deep cleanings or anything else that we might have to run up against. I think, and either Annette or Maria, I'm sure, will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've only done one deep cleaning to this point. Yeah.
Right. And yes, we did one. We had to do a deep cleaning in one of our elderly developments.
And so it was really hard to come up with a number to ask you guys for because we just don't know. So we kind of settled on we would ask for $150,000, and hopefully we don't come close to spending anywhere near that additional amount of money on top of the 50, and that's where we are. Their pricing is good. They've done really good work. They've been helpful to John and to Maria in providing just kind of guidance and suggestions, and this is what other people are doing, and that kind of thing on the emergency restoration front. So they've been really good so far.
I'll just add, we also just recently used them, as Maria just pointed out to me, for another deep cleaning on one of our scattered sites. And when we started our planning in early March, this was an area that we identified early. That we would need to have some level of flexibility on in the event, we would have outbreaks all over at our property. So we wanted to be prepared, and $150,000 does sound like a lot of money, and I know it's a figure that I support. It's a figure that I threw out, and I said, let's push it as high as we should, so that we do have the flexibility to do what we need to do in order to take care of our properties and ultimately our residents. So that's why it's such a high number at this point. We're hoping we don't spend that much, but we wanted to be able to do what we need to do in order to clean our properties.
This is Commissioner LaShane. Just a question. So under the Be It Resolved, the Section 1 really is 150 on top of the 50, not 200.
Correct.
Okay. And then the second section gives the authority to the executive director to sign the contract.
To amend it, right, to allow up to $200,000 for the current year, right. So
right.
You'd have an extra 150, right.
So Section 1 shouldn't be the extra 150?
It says the expenditure of up to $200,000 is the amended not to exceed amount. So $200,000 is the amount, not
$50,000. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, any other questions on that? Okay, hearing none, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. No. Any abstentions? Okay. Resolution passes. Okay. On to item number five, resolution number five, 20-2017 regarding award for Smith Tower elevation upgrade. Is there a motion to consider?
Commissioner Settlemyer makes the motion.
Thank you. And is there a second?
Commissioner LaShane, second.
Thank you, commissioners. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Staff or Ben?
Sure. So Ben, I guess they're all procurement tonight, actually. So this particular resolution, while you guys are all aware that we're upgrading the elevators at Smith Tower, and the modernization department went out and got four bids, as it says, and then they've made a recommendation for award. They have a not-to-exceed amount in there, which is what we always do. In this case, our modernization consultant, Corey Hartline, suggested that we add in up to 10% of the amount for the executive director to authorize for project change orders. And so we did that. And we set it up so that if the executive director does approve any change orders during a month that would go over the not to exceed amount but would be under the $150,000, that she would report those to the Board of Commissioners at the next scheduled board meeting following the execution of the order. So basically, we allowed for a 10% contingency on top of the not to exceed, which ended up being the bid amount, to allow some flexibility.
This is Commissioner LaShane. I love that section because it cleans up a lot of stuff from the previous resolution. It's like,
right.
Annette, I say this lovingly, and if Annette does something really bad, we have alternatives for that.
There you go.
And everybody knows on construction, there's always, an unintended change order or a needed change order. Mm-hmm. I love that section. That would be like something to incorporate and stuff to the, in the forward. So kudos.
Great. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Hearing none, it's been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
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 Any nays? No abstentions? Any abstentions, rather. Okay, hearing none, resolution. All set? Okay. Resolution passed. Those are all the resolutions, I believe. So next topic is old business. Is there any old business?
There is no old business to report.
Okay. And before I move to adjournment, nothing else? All right. Then
no,
is there a motion to
everyone? Thank you. Thank you. Please stay well. Thank you for your time.
All right. Do I need a motion to adjourn, counselor, or all set?
Nope.
Nope. Okay, fine. Then everybody can go their merry way. Thank you, everybody, for your time. Stay safe.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
Mr. Tiger. Thank you, Ned.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.